Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, and I want to thank Mitchell for carrying the ball in my absence. Friday was 2 weeks post my double bypass surgery, and I met with my surgeon, who was ecstatic over my progress. It appears I'm well ahead of the curve, very glad to say, from the many, many reports of those who either themselves or relatives had undergone similar surgeries. I've learned that the first 2 weeks, after the first 2 weeks, you're feeling substantially better, which I attest to be the case, and 2 weeks hence will feel even much better, and I anticipate that to be the case. One of the techniques for my rehabilitation physically is doing circumnavigation around my living room, and I have done that 10 consecutive times, one day on four different occasions, today already twice. So that's a very positive indication. The nurses, occupational therapist, a physical therapist, I've had all of the above visit. Each and every one attested that I was doing very well by all of their criteria. And I will be undergoing some forms of cardiac therapy in the future at a nearby hospital. In any case, Mitchell, I just want to say thank you so much for filling in, and I'm very, very glad to be back.
Oh, you're welcome, Jim. I'm glad I could sit in your absence, and I'm really glad that you're feeling a lot better. I know you will. I know my dad did. I know my grandfather did, because they both had a quadruple pass and then a triple for my grandfather. And my dad actually had a quadruple bypass. So, yeah, you will feel better. And they lived long lives afterwards.
Wow. I love all that. Mine was officially going to be a triple. But during the process, and this hasn't always been the case, they actually stop your heart from beating, and they use a blood lung machine to keep the blood circulating. Mm-hmm. And then they perform the surgery, and it turned out the third of the arteries they were going to replace was just too tiny. They weren't able to manipulate, so they did a double on one side of the heart and the other, and we're extremely happy from the beginning with the results of the surgery. So it was odd that my blood pressure was low. That kept me in the ICU for probably two extra days, but then I was released after only one day out of the ICU, so I got home, you know, it was about 5 days after the operation. I got to say, Mitchell, there was a period there of a couple of days when I really felt stressed out. I had great difficulty breathing. I wasn't at all sure at that point in time I'd made the right decision. But as things stand now, I'm feeling quite good. I've already done a half a dozen shows, and I'm glad to be back on Revolution Radio with you. And today, given my absence, we can open the phone lines early, say maybe halfway through our third segment, and certainly, I'll be glad to field any questions anyone has. In the meanwhile, I'm tremendously relieved that wiser heads prevailed in relation to the attacks upon the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. In all candor, even as I was going in for surgery, I was not at all sure I'd be coming out because of the potential for disintegrating most of the United States by an all-out nuclear response by Russia, which has warned repeatedly that if there were to be a nuclear attack and on the power plant, it would have been so viewed that Russia would respond with a massive all-out launch. I think that members of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, for example, must have realized this was going to be a catastrophe, and they induced Zelensky to cease the attacks on the power plant. So all by itself, that's a tremendous relief. Now, Biden, of course, has just committed what is virtually an unspeakable act by deciding to send cluster bombs to Ukraine. Now, these munitions are banned by an international treaty that neither the United States nor Israel has signed, but that makes it no more morally, or in my opinion, even legally responsible to use these munitions. Biden just let the cat out of the bag, which those of us who have been following the case knew months and months and months ago, to wit, the United States has run out of munition, 155 howitzer rounds, for example. So Biden said that they're compensating in the transition to beefing up our munition production by sending these cluster bombs. The major problem, of course, is that there's a very high rate of non-explosion. It's a larger bomb that drops a whole host, maybe 100 bomblets, distributes an area the size of a football field. And in the past, we've done this in Laos, in Vietnam, other areas where the United States has demonstrated its irresponsibility, its inhumanity, by using widely banned and condemned munitions. You have hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of children who are maimed because they pick these up, not knowing what they are, and they blow off their limbs, sever their head from their body, and the like. So this is pretty disgusting. Consequently, we have reports of multiple allies, human rights and anti-war groups, the UN and Moscow have all condemned Washington's decision to send these cluster bombs to Ukraine. Kiev has promised not to use the weapons against civilians, but Kiev's record using NATO weapons it already has speaks for itself. So here we have a number of commentators about what's going on here. This is a very, very bad thing. It's ridiculous how many times we've heard assurances such as Kiev is offering to not use them on civilians and security guarantees, said Andrei Koshkin, a veteran Russian academic specializing in military and international affairs. One can write about one's intention not to use these weapons against civilians in documents, but in practice, the conduct of military operation in Ukraine shows that the Ukrainian armed forces stop at nothing, pointing out that Kiev has already been condemned by the UN for airdropping Lepstock anti-personnel mines, for example. They won't be held back by any civilians. They use everything they've got to the fullest without even thinking about the consequences for their own population. A cursory analysis of recent media reports confirmed Koshkin's point, starting with the long history of Ukraine's terror shelling of Donbass cities and civilian infrastructure in Crimea, using NATO-caliber artillery and long-range missile systems, topping off with HIMARS rocket and drone attacks against Russian regions, the Joint Center for Control and Coordination, a Donbass-based watchdog, set up in 2014 to monitor violations of the Minsk agreements, reported this past May that over 4,500 civilians had been killed, more than 4,400 wounded, in Ukrainian shelling over the past year, with 3,791 of the fatalities recorded in newly liberated territories of the Donbass. Koshkin is confident the timing of the U.S. decision to send cluster munitions has everything to do with a stalling of Ukraine's summer counteroffensive, which he pointed out failed to break through Russian defensive lines at terrible cost to Kiev. Undersecretary Call confirmed in his press briefing, U.S. is hoping to deliver the cluster munitions to Ukraine in a time frame that's relevant for the counteroffensive. Call also assured the Ukrainians have a lot of combat power left and that, in fact, the majority of their combat power for this fight has not been brought to bear. Well, that's bullshit. The fact is the Russians are completely brilliant at defensive warfare. And not only is it the case that the prediction Ukraine was expending munitions at an unsustainable rate was made, oh, at least I'd say 6 months ago. Mike Adams was among those who published the point that Ukraine was destined to lose merely because they'd run out of munitions and that it would take the United States 1 to 2 years to ramp up production. This is not something that comes off of any assembly line. It requires very extensive arrangements of equipment and machinery in order to produce. Meanwhile, Russia has a massive advantage in artillery. They have no shortage. Their production lines are short. When you think about it from a logistic point of view, Russia has major advantages. Their contractors, by the way, aren't affected by their profit margin. They actually put up superb equipment that the Russian military can depend upon, unlike American contractors who frequently put out deliberately malfunctioning equipment, even at the highest price imaginable, such as the F-35. So that they can get maintenance contracts that double their profit margin without regard for the consequences for national security should the United States become engaged in actual combat, where reliance would be made on the equipment that has been virtually intentionally manufactured to be defective. Scott Ritter has observed, they used cluster munitions in Iraq, Vietnam, and Afghanistan and did not accept any responsibility. This is speaking of Washington, D.C. Delivery of these weapons to Ukraine is of no interest to them at all. On the contrary, it's very convenient for the U.S. to dump this dangerous and unreliable class of munitions on Ukraine after which the Pentagon can simply write them off. As for statements by U.S. allies, including Canada, Britain, Spain, and Germany, condemning Washington's decision to send its cluster munitions to Kiev, there's a clear tendency for Washington to simply ignore them, especially since formal condemnation is never followed by any real action. Scott Bennett, my dear friend and colleague, a former U.S. Army PSYOP warfare officer and State Department counterterrorism analyst, explained that the introduction of cluster bombs in Ukraine will be the equivalent of opening Pandora's box, and that its result will be nothing but violent, indiscriminate civilian deaths, destruction of property, and the haunting nightmare of children's screams. The supreme danger of the cluster bombs the U.S. is intent on sending to Ukraine is that they are 20 years old, which means they have a very high dud rate, probably 10 to 20% or more. That means these bomblets will be left unexploded all over the landscape, waiting for unsuspecting civilians to detonate them, which seems to be the objective, namely terror. Meanwhile, NATO's unity is going to be tested at its summit in Vilnius as the Russian invasion continues with no end in sight. NATO's much-celebrated unity faces fresh strains when leaders gather for their annual summit this week in Lithuania. The world's largest security alliance is struggling to reach an agreement on admitting Sweden as its 32nd member. Military spending by members still lags behind long-standing goals, and the inability to compromise over who should serve as NATO's next leader forced an extension of the current Secretary General's term for an extra year. Perhaps most thorny are questions over how Ukraine should be eased into the alliance, or, in my opinion, more sensibly, why it ought not to be allowed to become a member. Some maintain admitting Ukraine to NATO would fulfill promise made years ago and a necessary step to deter Russian aggression in Eastern Europe. But if you stop and think about it, this is simply a manifest absurdity. Russia warned that Ukraine must not become a member of NATO because in having that massive nation on Russia's borders equipped with NATO missile systems constituted an existential threat to Russia. There's been no ambiguity about this whatsoever. Vladimir Putin, on February 24th, in his magisterial statement laying out the reasons for the Russian special military operation over a year ago, was emphatic that that was a major consideration. In addition, of course, the Russians had discovered that Kiev was planning a massive assault on the Donbass, which following the 2014 coup that was engineered by Victoria Nuland using $5 billion of American taxpayer dollars to depose the Russian-friendly president and install a Western stooge of whom Zelensky is his successor, led to artillery attacks on the Russian-speaking ethnic Russian residents of the Donbass, which has continued unabated until the Russian intervention, and where there was to be a massive all-out assault on the Donbass, prompting Putin to act when he did to preempt the event. And of course, in addition, we have 20 or 30 of these bio labs that are inventing, contriving biological weapons, some of which are designed to be ethnic or race specific. They were doing research on Russian DNA so they could develop a weapon that could be used to target genetically Russian citizens I mean, this is all completely outrageous. Some thus have observed that admitting Ukraine, which I've got to say is just preposterous on its face, would be seen as a provocation that could spiral into an even wider conflict. Yeah, right. I mean, there's the understatement of the day. It cannot happen. Russia will not allow it to happen. And by the way, there's simply no way in which Russia can lose this war. Ukraine cannot possibly win. The Russian artillery advantage is on the order of 10 to 1. And the casualties that are taking place, regardless of what you may read in the mainstream, are on a similar order, 10 to 1. That's not sustainable for Ukraine to lose 10 Ukrainian soldiers for every single Russian. But it's continuing unabated, and there's no obvious reason to expect it's going to change. Now, a wonderful article by John Mearsheim, published on my blog at jameshfetzer.org, explained that while the ultimate security maneuver for Russia might be to control all of Ukraine, that would require a massive force. He estimated at 2 million, which obviously would be an impractical and unfeasible operation. However, others who have, you know, been engaged in combat doubt those numbers are appropriate. On the other hand, Russia, I believe, will be satisfied with Crimea, the Donbass, and a number of these other regions that constitute about 40% of the territory of Ukraine, leaving Kiev and the rest as a dysfunctional government that poses no serious threat to Russia. So he surmises, and I agree, that this is going to be an ugly victory for Russia. The problem being whether the West should become so desperate that it wants to engage in the use of tactical nuclear weapons, which would be catastrophic. That would be a major escalation. And again, as in the case of attacking the nuclear power plant, Russia has made it clear that the introduction of nuclear weapons will not be met piecemeal, but rather by a wholesale attack. And hopefully, the more sober minds in the West are going to ensure that does not happen. But in my opinion, it's all too easy to imagine circumstances under which an area commander could, in fact, go ahead to use a dialed-down tactical nuke, where these have the ability to be adjusted for the mass of their explosion in the area that it would affect, on the ground that the Russians aren't going to object to a small nuke, when that, I think, is very clear not the case, that Russia is going to react massively. And when that happens, you and I, Mitchell, aren't going to be having any further conversations. Honest to God, I wasn't at all sure I would come out of the hospital because I was, even though Madison is not a high priority target, when the nukes start to fly, it's going to be impossible to control the areas, and it'll turn out to be a situation where the living envy the dead. Of this, I have
absolutely
no doubt. No doubt whatsoever, Mitch. Yes.
Well, Jim, let me jump in here for a second and give you a chance to breathe. There is one thing for sure that what we are doing in the West is we are pushing the Overton window open and we're normalizing crossing the red line. If you're not aware that Russia shot down a cruise missile that was shot from Ukraine, a Western supplied cruise missile that was shot down over Crimea, and that, you know, this whole invasion, you know, essentially started the month after the U.S. attempted to overthrow Kazakhstan, you know, on the other side of the Black Sea, right? Yeah, right there, on the underbelly of Russia. And that was done by Victoria Nuland in the middle of negotiations with Russia. So, you know, there is, there's a reason there's no diplomatic response, and that there is no exit ramp for this conflict. I believe that the neocons are just so foaming at the mouth that, you know, they're so excited. This is their game of the century right now. And they are in control in D.C. They have their fingers on the buttons of power that the vacant, you know, the vacuum left by Biden and Kamala Harris. So, you know, I'm trying to think of the one of the guys. There was a movie, the president's plane was missing, and the vice president was like the, you know, it might have been a different one. Anyway, this guy was trying to start World War III because, you know, they didn't even know where the president was. They knew his plane was down. But this guy wanted to go, you know, full DEFCON 3. And, you know, it was a good thing that there was somebody there with a mind to rationalize what was going on. Yeah, we're almost to the bottom of the hour break here, Jim.
Those were excellent, excellent comments, Mitch. And as this summit, which is taking place this week, will also be considering whether Sweden should become a member of NATO. I have historically admired the Scandinavian countries for remaining neutral, but now they are compromising, putting their own nations at risk.
We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Oh, Mitchell, well, you know, go ahead.
Go ahead. Hey, Jim, I was just going to tell you, and the break come in, there was a Quran burning in Sweden. And Turkey has said, no way in hell that we're going to allow Sweden get a NATO membership. And, you know, I thought it was a real shame because, you know, they wasted bacon. This was an Iraqi Christian protesting what he felt about the Quran, and he had it stuffed with bacon and was burning it. So,
stuffed with bacon, very funny.
Yes,
because of course Muslims like Jews are not allowed to eat bacon. I mean,
there was quite the riot.
This sounds like quite a stunt, Mitchell. You know, there's so many of these fake events that are done to achieve the political objective.
Well, if it'll keep Sweden out of NATO, I'm okay with that part.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe Sweden would be so dumb as to want to join NATO. You know, I was saying just before the break how I've admired the Scandinavian countries for remaining politically neutral, and they've thrown it all away. Norway even seems to have been involved in the Nord Stream bombing. I mean, how bad is that? But I do believe the ultimate consequences of the Ukrainian intrusion is not so much the military situation, which I believe is pretty much already predetermined that Russia is going to prevail, that there's no way Ukraine can win, but where the elephant in the room, and the reason it's become such a huge matter for the West, is because Israel wants Ukraine to be the new Israel, and because our own Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. Cynthia McKinney revealed back in 2011 on Press TV Iranian television how new members of Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel even ahead of those of the United States, and where I've endlessly reported how our media is dominated by dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. I have a panel of 100 execs from CNN, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, a panel from NBC. Another 100 execs, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, another from the New York Times. 100 execs, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. We can't get straight news from any of the mainstream. It's all controlled by a Zionist-filtered media. And, of course, we long since have known that Ukraine is profoundly that Hollywood is under profound control. Indeed, there's a very significant piece also published on my blog about what's actually going on here by a fellow by the name of Joseph Jordan, that the U.S. government is responsible for the riots in France. And it turns out that Obama appointed an ambassador to France who was a Hollywood movie mogul by the name of Rifkin, Charles Rifkin, Jewish, of course, who created a memorandum with a 7-point plan for mobilizing blacks and Mojaves in France as a political cudgel against their hosts as a part of the clergy plan, which, for those who are unaware, promotes the genocide of white people through miscegenation, that's mixed marriage, and mass immigration of non-whites to Europe. This plan, drawn up in 1923 by Count Richard Gallurgi, is inspired by human mastery over farm animals, in other words, selective breeding. It seeks to generate a passive, tame, predictable, and manipulable mixed race of inferior character and intelligence over which the Jewish aristocratic elite could eventually rule, since this inferior mind would prevent them from organizing to rebel and even realize they are dominated. The term Eurasian Negroid race can be found in Gallurgi's books. That is what the supremacist Zionists are desperately trying to achieve: the extinction of all cultures and races, particularly the European. Gallurgi shared the opinion of Joseph Arthur de Gobineau on the high performance of the white race, especially the Nordic sub-race, but did not aspire to the promotion, conservation, and strengthening thereof, but rather to its destruction. Hitler was aware of Gallurgi's plan and did everything in his power to prevent it. Like Gobineau, Hitler considered the Aryan race to be the noblest, the best armed for the struggle for existence, the most beautiful, the most energetic, that with the greatest amount of creative genius. What this race lost by mixing was not compensated by what others gained by ennoblement. It has always happened that the decline of civilizations had occurred because they contaminated their blood. This is the inexorable law. Fascinating stuff, because we not only have the Gallurgi plan being implemented in Europe, which has been of long standing, but we have it taking place here in the U.S. too, with the Western Hemisphere variant bringing massive numbers of migrants from Central and South America. In fact, from latest estimate, I think maybe 100 different nations around the world to flood our border. Already, I suspect there are millions here, and the problem becomes, what role are they going to play? I'd appreciate your reflection on, Mitchell, of whether we can anticipate it will be similar to what's going on in Paris with such widespread destruction of automobiles, attacks on police stations, churches burning, even museums and libraries. Could that happen here in the USA?
I'd like to
express doubt. Yeah, there's a certain way of modeling what happened in France after the George Floyd riots, about which the Democrats were so very enthusiastic. Your thoughts?
Oh, it's certainly, there is certainly a parallel there. You know, this destruction of societies and the power that goes with them, because if you destroy the citizens and their power politically by bringing in a large number of immigrants, you know, and I don't know if many people realize that since Joe Biden has become president, we know of 5.2 million people that have come across the border and been allowed to stay. There was another 1.3 to 1.6 million, somewhere in, I don't remember the exact number, that were so-called getaways that they said they saw at the border, but they never found them later. Okay. So, you know, understand that, you know, you're looking at close to 7 million, you know, illegal immigrants or more. And you know, here's the thing. This doesn't include people who overstay their visas. You know, you can easily come in and overstay your visa and, you know, weeks and months, and your chances of getting picked up are slim to none.
Yes. Yes.
Now,
yes.
Did you hear that California is trying to sue Florida for sending illegal immigrants, illegal migrants, whatever you want to call them, asylum seekers to California? And they're trying to get the federal prosecutors involved in this, when at the same time, you know, being a sanctuary state, the state of California and the municipalities within it are all handcuffing the Border Patrol from tracking down and removing illegal aliens that are, you know, wanted or shouldn't be here. And they get, and so you have sanctuary state status. And now, you know, the sanctuaries are complaining that they're sending, you know, people to their sanctuary. But they deny the jurisdiction. They deny the enforcement efforts. And now they're complaining about, you know, getting too many immigrants. So, it's all a political stunt to break down, you know, the numbers of representatives that we have. It's like national gerrymandering. You know, I don't know if you're aware, Jim, but during this, when they had the census and they cranked all the numbers out and they applied the census to the states and their representation under the House and divvied everything up, they made miscalculations because they counted illegal immigrants into the apportionment of the political power and not just an apportionment into the financial distributions that states get. But so there was, I don't know if it has been corrected, but to my knowledge, it hasn't been. So, you know, California has an extra House seat, and so do a couple other liberal states, and conservative states have got shafted.
Well, you make excellent points, Mitchell. I don't imagine that lawsuit going to have much success, but it's, I would suggest, an attempt to tarnish DeSantis. Many Democrats take DeSantis more seriously than they do Trump, although obviously the all-out warfare, the scorched earth policy they've adopted toward Trump shows that he really is a major threat to the Democrats. And of course, how many elections can they steal to keep him out of office? Right. I began to suggest that the enduring consequence of the conflict in Ukraine is actually not a question of geography, but one of economics, where all of the sanctions that have been imposed by the West on Russia have backfired, especially the fact that they have undermined, you know, seize Russian assets, kick Russia out of the SWIFT. Other nations looking at the situation here can see that the United States will use its control over economics to affect the politics of the various nations, and they don't want to be a part of it. So that a major development has been the growth of BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperative Organization, of which Iran has just become the latest member. Here we have an excellent piece from Zero Hedge. The gold standard is back. BRICS to introduce gold-backed reserve currency. This is going to have vast ramifications and reverberation. Nixon, of course, took the U.S. off of the gold standard so that the dollar was no longer supported by precious metals on the basis of recommendations from Henry Kissinger that could sustain its value by its use as the petrodollar, as a reserve currency for transactions between nations. Between while that has worked successfully up until of late, it is no longer viable because the dollar is being abandoned. Here's part of the commentary from Zero Hedge. Remember back when the Russia-Ukraine war just started and I predicted Russia and China would launch their own gold-backed currency? At the time, the idea sounded completely foreign, and I was ridiculed for bringing it up. Today, it just became reality as 41-plus countries look like they could be returning to a gold standard. There you go. It's official. BRIC plan to introduce new trading currency backed by gold at its August summit. Gold standard will be a great benefit to strengthen single currency. 41 states. The images plastered all over RT this weekend had headlines like new money, new world. Gold standard will be of great benefit to strengthening new single currency. The official announcement is expected to be made during the BRICS summit in August in South Africa. At first glance, a new transaction unit backed by gold sounds like good money. And it could be, first and foremost, a major challenge to the U.S. dollar's hegemony, said Thorsten Pollitt, chief economist at Degussa. But he continued, for making the new currency as good as gold, a truly sound currency, it must be convertible into gold on demand. I am not sure whether this is what Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa have in mind. Using gold as money, the unit of account would be a true game changer, no doubt about it. It could lead to a sharp devaluation of many fiat currencies, vis-a-vis the yellow metal, including the BRICS' own fiat currencies, and could catapult up good prices in terms of those currencies. It could be a shock to the global fiat money system. I'm not sure this is what BRICS wishes to achieve, for the new announcement, as mentioned, is anticipated in August. Even more shocking is the cavalier attitude of our Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen. In statements I can only describe as completely delusional, Yellen said this weekend, I just want to reiterate what I've said in the past, which is, I think the United States can rest assured that the dollar is going to play the dominant role in facilitating international transaction and serving as a reserve currency in the years ahead. I don't see that role being threatened by any development, including the one you've mentioned, BRICS common currency. But listen, you don't have to be an economist to understand that what Janet Yellen is saying is completely absurd, indefensible. This really does mark the beginning of the end of the petrodollar, and it's going to have massive effects, Mitchell, for the quality of life of Americans, because the value of the dollar is going to be massively devalued, and we're going to suffer forms of inflation that we have never before seen in the history of the United States. Your thoughts?
Well, it's certainly the Fed delusion continues, you know, that the more they drink their own Kool-Aid, you know, the crazier they seem to get. But I would ask you, and I would ask everybody out there, you know, that isn't that World War III essentially a new world reserve currency? That it seems that almost every time we have a major world conflict, that the world reserve currency and the power shifts. This time, though, I believe they wanted to shift to a crypto system and, you know, have this world currency, you know, digital cryptocurrency blockchained, so they will have the ultimate power. I know a lot of states have essentially said that cryptocurrency blockchain by, you know, the Fed is essentially going to be illegal. But I can't see them as I don't see any way of stopping it if the federal government gives its rubber stamp from the Treasury. But, you know, this gold backed trading with the BRICS nations, it's just yet another piece of evidence that the American and the Western empire of the banking system that was built is crumbling. And, you know, the money is shifting. Now, I'm trying to think if it's in Shanghai, Shenzhen, the Davos, Eastern Davos, is supposed to be happening, I guess, in a short time. So the World Economic Forum, you know, they have the Davos of the West, and they have the Davos of the East, and that's just that's upcoming. So the world power will shift just if you just change the import export business of the world. If nothing is exported from China due to a war via the ocean, besides the Belt Road, what do they have? No other way to export anything. If anything or everything isn't turned into a war economy for China.
Yes. Yes. A war economy for China.
They are, yeah, you know, I didn't know how bad the Chinese economy really is right now. I've been seeing pieces and articles, you know, like the there was a thing I had saw last week about $1 trillion of bonds that are owed American investors have yet to be paid by China. And, you know, China has this hole in their local banks, has a $98 trillion, and with a T, trillion dollar yuan hole in their banks. And what is happening is that the money that from the banks was spent by the government. So there's really no way to get the money back. It's no investment of anything. There's no private monies to get back. It's all, you know, Chinese Communist Party money that has essentially been given to the government by the banks, and it's all gone. So that's coming due right now. So, you know, China desperately needs something to happen from the outside to focus the patriotic wing, the, you know, the nationalistic idea, you know, of China and Mao and the Communist Party, to bring that to coalition to keep that together. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of black swans out here that are flying around. And I don't know which one's going to be shot down first.
Yes. Yes. So, well, the U.S. economy, I think, is going to pay dearly for the war in Ukraine and the abuse of these sanctions. I think it was incredibly short-sighted decision to go in that direction, but unsurprising in the extreme, given the parties in charge who actually have no business running the government. I mean, you can look at it as either massive incompetence, and that's the somehow appealing explanation if you're of a non-conspiratorial cast of mind. You look at the Biden, this guy commits all these gaffes, wanders around the stage, can't complete a sentence and all that. But the fact of the matter is he wouldn't be in office but for having stolen the election at 2020 in so many mm-hmm. different ways. And it was to put in place a puppet government that could be controlled by outside sources for the malevolent purpose of destroying America. I don't believe any objective observer at this point in time could assess the evidence when you put together undermining the legal system by the source-appointed district attorneys who won't enforce the law, by the massive migration being allowed to come over, by the unwillingness to deal with homelessness in the United States, and where I'm very, very apprehensive about plans to locate, to reside the homeless. I mean, in New York, they're in a desperate plight because they've been using hotels at fantastic expense to house the homeless, but hotels are not homeless shelters.
Well, Jim, they got a solution to that. For $175 a night, you can house a migrant in your home in New York City.
And do you know of anyone in the right mind who would do that, Mitchell? I mean,
a Jewish landlord with a bunch of empty apartments. No, I don't know, Jim. You know, it's madness, you know. They allege, you know, it's this allegation that 10,000 illegal immigrants have cost the city of New York $1 billion. You know, hell, they could have just come over, give them a check, and told them to get the hell out of here. At that price, it'd be cheaper.
But of course, the whole idea, I mean, this is part of the plan to overwhelm our social safety network, where all economists agree you cannot combine open borders with a social safety network because it will collapse the economy, which is taking place before our very eyes.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, there's another really quite fascinating article by a fellow named Roger Kimball on my blog about how the Biden Ministry of Truth appears to be in deep, deep trouble on multiple grounds. He cites, for example, the serial revelations of the Elon Musk-enabled Twitter files as journalists like Mike Tiabi, Glenn Greenwald, Barry Weiss and Michael Schellenberger took the ball and ran, exposing some portion of the Fed intrusion into and censorship of the media, social and otherwise. Those revelations might well have taken down another administration, but key segments of the media are too housebroken to respond to the scandal with appropriate outrage. Second, the Republican takeover of the House and the robust performance of Speaker Kevin McCarthy and committee chairs like Jim Jordan of Judiciary, James Comer oversight, to ferret out, expose, and hold accountable the corrupt actors of the deep state have opened a network of fissures in the edifice supporting the Biden conglomerate elections, as other politicians have observed, do have consequences. Finally, there are the courts. The wheels of justice grind slow, we're told, but exceedingly fine. That's when they're operating properly. The Supreme Court has lately delivered a series of decisions that threaten to upend the entire diversity industry upon which the regime battens in its effort to enforce ideological conformity throughout the educational establishment and a cowed and tranquilized populace. The latest judicial intervention, released with what seems like poetic justice on July 4th, comes from U.S. District Judge Terry Daugherty of Louisiana. In an extraordinarily forthright 155-page ruling, Judge Daugherty issued a preliminary injunction barring the White House and a clutch of federal agencies from liaising with social media to suppress, censor, or otherwise subvert the expression of political opinions critical to the regime. Responding to Missouri v. Biden, a suit brought by the attorneys general of Missouri and Louisiana, Doty noted with refreshing frankness that the censorship alleged in this case almost exclusively targeted conservative speech. The evidence produced thus far depicts an almost dystopian scenario during the COVID-19 pandemic, a period perhaps best characterized by widespread doubt and uncertainty. The United States government seems to have assumed a role similar to an Orwellian Ministry of Truth. And at issue is not just censorship of contrary opinions about COVID, its origins, severity, and treatment, along with still burning questions about the efficacy and safety of vaccines imposed upon a stupefied public. The censorship also extends to other subjects, including the Hunter Biden laptop from hell story, which all the world now knows was ruthlessly censored on the lead up to the 2020 election. And then there's the 2020 election itself, whose long shadow includes a January 6th imbroglio. As Judge Doherty noted, all were suppressed. Furthermore, he writes, it's quite telling that each example or category of suppressed speech was conservative in nature. This targeted suppression of conservative ideas is a perfect example of viewpoint discrimination of political speech. American citizens have the right to engage in free debate about the significant issues affecting the country. Phil Hamburger, a Columbia law professor and CEO of the New Civil Liberties Alliance, which represent plaintiffs in the case, crisply summarizes state of play in an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal. The case, Hamburger predicted, may well become one of the most important free speech cases in the nation's history. The injunction is against the FBI, the DOJ, the CDC, and five other federal agencies, as well as against officials such as a Surgeon General and various White House staffers, including the press secretary. It prohibits them from threatening, pressuring, or coercing social media companies in any manner to remove, delete, suppress, or reduce posted content that contain protected free speech. Everyone expects the Biden admin to appeal, after all, having been in the censorship business so long and so successfully. The administration will be loath to open the window on free expression and opinion, critical of its own performance. Mitchell, this is an historic case, very appropriate. The judge appears to have understood the issues 100%, and I give him the highest possible marks for being a responsible representative of what American law and constitutional government is supposed to be all about. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely, Jim. You know, that's a case of born on the 4th of July in this ruling. It truly does put a hold, and maybe, just maybe, that a spotlight can be put on, you know, this mass psychosis that the media, in cooperation, coordination, and I say conspiracy with, you know, the government, social media, and the old mockingbird media, essentially working together, becoming an echo chamber. And we are supposed to bow to that reality. Does not matter if, you know, it is 100% wrong. It doesn't matter if it's gaslighting and lies. You know, it is, it's an affront to what America is and what it was founded on for the government to even be considering and doing literally mind control programs through mass media to essentially to get people to take a shot, or for a political party to neutralize another to neutralize the new president that's coming in a shadow coup that is essentially pushed through all the governments where Trump was attacked as a president even before he was even while he was still candidate Trump and then president-elect Trump. We have to understand that, you know, there is no justice in our justice system. We can see the political crimes perpetrated one after the other. And the media that was supposed to be a fourth estate, an independent arbiter of the truth. Well, they have essentially now become the media and marketing arms of the government. So we, at what point do we say we can no longer even trust what we think because of the mass media mind control that we are experiencing today?
Very well said, Mitchell. He adds, whatever happens, the Wall Street Journal's Jacob Grishman is right. The case is among the most potentially consequential First Amendment battle pending in the courts. Testing the limits on government scrutiny of social media content on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and other major platforms. Never before has a federal judge set such sweeping limits on how the federal government may communicate with online platforms. And, of course, from my point of view, it's also extended to Amazon.com, which, as most of those here are aware, have banned 6 of my books, not just on Sandy Hook, but on the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, even the moon landing. Now, what I have done, of course, as most of you are aware, is collaborative research by bringing together the best qualified experts I can find to sort out what happened in these complex and controversial cases and then dissect them systematically. In the case of Sandy Hook, bringing together 13 experts, including 6 PhDs, to sort out what happened there, where we established that the school had been closed by 2008. Inside sources have informed me it was actually closed in 2006 and wasn't even an elementary school. It was actually a special needs school, that there were no students or teachers there, and that it was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control, for which we even found the manual. More on this on our show on Wednesday, when I have a very special guest coming on, and we'll address this and a host of other issues. But I am convinced that, in fact, the censoring, the banning of my books was Amazon acting as an agent of the state. In fact, the book was banned after it had been on sale for less than a month, but it already sold nearly 500 copies. I received a phone call from someone presenting themselves as representing First Edition, the television program, claiming they wanted to feature me and the discoveries that we'd made about Sandy Hook. But first, I had to have a pre-interview interview. And boom, I found myself in what I'm convinced was a basement operation at Langley, where a professional was confronting me. No pleasantries, no introduction, just, what do you got? And I explained, 13 experts, including 6 PhDs. What do you got? Well, we discovered the school had been closed by 2008. There were no students or teachers there. What do you got? And it was a two-day FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. What do you got? Well, we even found the manual and included it in Appendix A, that we have photographs from the Lanza home of the bed where Nancy Lanza is supposed to have been killed, but where there doesn't appear to be real blood. It appears to be maybe raspberry jam, and where there are notes on a cedar chest there that we find in others where they appear to have been keeping track of how they arrange the room, and where there's a blue moving pad beneath the leg of the bed that they forgot to remove. What do you got? Well, we have a crime scene van present in the parking lot, and yet it has to be before the crime was even committed because the windows of classroom 10 are not shot up. What do you got? It went on like that until they just ceased and hung up because they had enough. And it was 2 days later, the book was banned. So I'm convinced that was, you know, CIA acting on behalf of Biden. That was 2012. The deep state to ban the book. And to, you know, ensure it didn't get out into the wider public domain, where I threw them a curveball, because when the book was banned, I recognized this was all wrong, and release a book for free as a PDF. It was Obama was still in office at the time. This was 2015. Trump, of course, would win the election and come into office in 2016. So since this appears to have been a case of Eric Holder running the op, indeed my inside sources have declared that he came to Newtown in 2006 to offer $140 million if they would participate in this scheme that was supposed to benefit America by showing what could happen if we don't take guns away from the public. I believe there were a number of do-gooders, but they were all really also motivated by pecuniary interests. I mean, they got big bucks for doing this. There would eventually be a $50 million grant for a new school at Sandy Hook, which was absurd in its amount, because I surveyed the cost of a kindergarten through fourth grade school, which is all this was presented as having been. As I say, it actually appears to have been a special needs school and not an elementary school at all. But they only cost $7 million across the country on the average. So they got seven times $7 million for a new $50 million structure. How absurd can you get? But was this to be, I said at the time, the Taj Mahal of elementary schools? Mitchell, the whole situation is absurd, but I'm convinced Amazon, too, was a part of the game to suppress. And they were also acting at the behest of the Anti-Defamation League, because the banning of the moon book doesn't appear to have been its expose of the moon landing hoax, for which there's a mountain of evidence, but rather because it had a selection of essays about the Holocaust, and it's indispensable to Jewish political power to preserve the illusion of the Holocaust. Because that their influence is rooted in a Western sense of guilt over the what is supposed to be the mass murder of 6 million Jews. We know it didn't happen. In particular, there weren't even any facilities there that could have served as the gas chambers that were supposed to have been the instrument for bringing about their death. But that they actually were using Zyklon B, which is a mild form of cyanide, to kill body lice, which were spreading typhus and dysentery in the camps in order to preserve the health of the inmates, for the simple reason that you can't get work out of a corpse. These were labor camps, not death camps. And indeed, the International Committee of the Red Cross was keeping meticulous notes on all the inmates on all the camps, their age, their sex, their ethnicity, their religion, and their cause of death. And in 1993, did a recalibration and found the total was 896,081 deaths from all causes combined, none of whom were put to death in gas chambers using Zyklon B. I published about this. You can find my piece entitled The Holocaust Narrative, Politics Trump's Truth, on the government rag and also on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. I mean, the public has been played so massively, Mitchell, by so many lies. And as, of course, the Third Reich learned, the bigger the lie, the easier it is to sell, because ordinary people are used to little lies about where they were, what they were doing, you know, spending money they weren't supposed to spend and the like. But they can't expand their imagination to imagine lies of this magnitude, which is part and parcel of the success of the COVID pandemic. We were sold such massive lies, and where they converted, you know, Simple did a number game on 38 million cases of the flu the year before, trickled down to only 2,000 because they converted the other 38,998,000 into now cases of COVID to promote the false illusion of a pandemic, where there was no increase in the death rate in any of the age categories. That only occurred after the introduction of the vax, which has been devastating. So again, I congratulate Judge Doherty on rendering what appears to be an excellent and historic decision that's going to have vast ramifications. Mitchell, your thoughts?
Well, you really have to hand it to German contract law. You know, to actually have, to be able to keep starving people on the job and have them die of 20 different causes. It can really suck. But, you know, we have to push back against this censorship, because what we end up with is the Jim Jones effect. The David Koresh effect, you know, this idea of cult leaders that develop out of misinformation and disinformation, when the ideas of free speech are not allowed to be put forth. You know, that's one of the most important things that I think about, is everybody must be able to hear alternatives of things that they, most people, even hate to hear. But, you know, we must hear the things that we don't believe or we find implausible. And, you know, at the same time, everybody else should try to remain open to another's position. It's only through those ideas that we can actually end up with
Mitchell, I'm game for opening the lines to callers. I take it our call number remains the same, 540-352-4452.
Yes, sir.
540-352-4452. You're welcome to call. Meanwhile, get this, Mitchell. I find this appalling. 40% of students at elite Ivy League schools say they're LGBTQ+. I mean, this is just
incredible.
Just incredible. A new survey released by Brown University Student Paper stunningly shows 40% students attending the elite Ivy League school now identify as LGBTQ+. Indicating that social pressures are radically altering the way people view their sexual orientation. The Brown Daily Herald reported between 2010 and 2023, students identifying as LGBTQ+ has nearly tripled among the student body. It went from 14% in 2010 to 38% today. The Herald Spring 2023 poll found that 38% of students do not identify as straight, over five times the national rate. Over the past decade, LGBTQ+ identification has increased across the nation, with especially sharp growth at Brown. Let me just add, by the way, for those who may be unaware, Brown is kind of a middle-ranking Ivy League college and receives more applications than any other school, I think, for that reason. Applicants believe they have a better prospect of gaining admission to Brown than they do, say, Harvard, Princeton, or Yale. So it receives the highest number of applications, perhaps, of any school in the country. Here's more of this report. Since fall of 2010, Brown's LGBTQ plus population has expanded considerably. The gay or lesbian population has increased by 26%. The percentage of students identifying as bisexual has increased by 232%. Students identifying as other sexual orientations within the LGBTQ plus community have increased by 793%. Mitchell,
Jim, also so has the percentage of students identifying as a turnip.
It's just staggering.
Hey, we have two callers already. We're almost on the break, too.
All right.
We have Paul is going to be first up. We have about 50 seconds, or I can kill the break.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, sure. Okay, you can kill the break. Go ahead, kill the break and bring in Paul. I'm glad to hear a familiar voice. Paul, join the conversation.
Okay, Fetzer, they better give you a strong heart. Here comes one of my calls. The earth is flat. There's no nukes, and we need to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
That for openers.
Where have I heard that before?
The final solution was not final enough, huh? So it's good to hear you up and about, and, glad that everything went well. I've been getting reports by text, so I just kind of decided that, I just would let you, recover, gradually at home, and I'm glad to see that things are going well so far.
Well, of course, the whole idea, as I explained to the surgeon when we had our initial consultation, was to get me back on the air to continue all the shows. So given that I'm feeling strong enough to undertake that project, I want to take advantage of all those opportunities, including right here at Revolution Radio. And, of course, we don't need to re-debate nukes, but, I have a potential debate with Richard Gage about how the Twin Towers were destroyed, where he wants to invite a fellow named Michael Costa, of whom I do not have a particularly high opinion based upon past engagement, on one side, on his side, with me and Joe Olson on the other. So that's something you can anticipate. That's something you can anticipate in the future. Of course, you obviously not believing in nukes are going to side with Gage rather than Joe and me, but it should be an interesting and worthwhile exchange. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
No, not necessarily. Obviously, thermite, nanothermite, all that doesn't have the explosive power to have brought those buildings down. That's a given. But that's a separate topic from, finding certain elements, right, that would not have been there had it not been a nuclear, I know these phrases well because I've heard them so many times, but I will once again say to you, again, hoping you have that strong heart I just mentioned, that if you spent less time on the air flapping your gums and more time taking the material in that I sent to you, okay, that you have not read and that you have not really given a fair, shall we say, hearing, a fair shake, then you wouldn't believe in these things that they want you to believe in, such as what you just referenced with the big lie and how the big lie is somehow easier. And I never bought any of that, really. That's just something that somebody says. It's not really any kind of provable hypothesis that really shouldn't be stated over and over again, which you and other people have. And, of course, it's a lie. They take the whole thing out of quote. What the Germans and what Hitler said about the big lie was that the Jews engage in the most ridiculous whoppers, okay? They are the perpetrators of the big lie. And, of course, it's always been twisted around to make it seem like, oh, the Nazi propaganda was based upon the big lie. And, of course, that is a big lie in and of itself. I think I'm now on very safe ground with you, by the way, that the Germans in all – when you consider the totality – of the so-called Nazi party, the National Socialist regime, the Germans were the good guys. I've been saying this since way before I've called your show. And it's now become, in my opinion, more than abundantly clear what they were trying to prevent. And that's what you're seeing right now, the destruction of Western civilization wholesale by Jews. Not Zionists, because there was always Jews way before Zionism came on the scene. Zionism or Zionist is one of those words that people use as a sort of a substitute for the biological entity that has very known and well-described behaviors over time of what they do and who they are. Okay, I'll take a breather.
That's good, Paul. Stand by while we bring in the other caller, and then we can continue. Yes, who else do we have here, Mitchell?
Hey, Brian's here.
All right, Brian, join the conversation.
Well, just glad to see you back. I was worried they would find some excuse to put you on a ventilator and give you remdesivir. So I'm glad you survived it anyway. So... what I wanted to point out kind of goes with what Paul was talking about is Veterans Today Military and Foreign Affairs Journal, who has a lot of good stuff on 9/11 and always good stuff on the Germans and the National Socialists. They have an article up now called The Avatar of Word, W-Y-R-D, by Mike Kay. And this was just so spot on. It's about Adolf Hitler, and he points out that National Socialism was a government that was founded on the good of the German people, that they came first, and they would pool all their resources to things that were good for the Aryans, the Germans, and that it's not like fascism. That's another label they put on it to make it sound bad, but it's not fascism. And then he talked about Hitler's paintings, and there's always this stuff about, oh, Hitler is the offspring of you know, some Jewish Rothschild or whatever that slept with his grandmother or whatever. And they analyzed his paintings. And this was really interesting to me because I do all this Kundalini yoga stuff. And I realized divine energy, divine quantum mechanical energy spins in a circle. It's not linear. When you get evil energy, it's linear. And they show that his paintings are more of that bend, and then they compared it to Jewish artists like Chagall and how theirs are all linear, and they said, nope, that shows that he doesn't have that Jewish blood in him. And then what really blew my mind, and I know this is going to go beyond anything that you'll believe, but, you know, I download this information, and one of the things they showed me way back when was the Greek gods and goddesses were real. It's part of their Jewish thing of erasing everything that was known in the past. Okay. Just like, you know, Tartaria, you know, that existed, but now we don't know anything about it. Well, it was the same with that. And they showed me that Prometheus, that they said they souls can break down 12,000 times, that they were too powerful to incarnate in human bodies. So they broke their souls down. Prometheus broke his down the 12,000 times. 7,000 of those souls became Christ consciousness. So Christ was actually Prometheus. And that part of it broke down and became Wotan or Odin, who is the god for the Aryans. And then part of it broke down for the Indians. But anyway, so I got this information. And then he talked about in this article in 1889, a painting by Franz Stuck called Wotan, which would be like Odin, Wotan of the Wild Hunt. And this painting, I mean, there's just books written about this painting because it so affected the German psyche. And Hitler was born in 1889. And then he talked about Aryan beliefs that time is cyclic. And I always get information on that, like, you know, February 24th, 1920 is when Hitler had his 25-point program basically to get rid of the Jews. And February 24th of 2022, we get the Russian invasion. You know, you got the 1918 pandemic, you got our pandemic 100 years later. I mean, those examples, they just show me over and over. And so when I read all this stuff, and then with what I get, it just fits so perfectly. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say about it.
Well, Brian, I know your beliefs don't require my support for you to maintain them. And of course, they, for the most part, they do not have my support. I mean, this is just for clarity. The concept of a soul, you know, as a professional philosopher, I mean, the concept of a soul is very troublesome. How do you identify, you know, souls? But are there any observation measurements or experiments that can detect the presence or the absence of souls? It's been a very popular concept as the idea of the animating spirit of a human being. But persons are animated by the totality of their motives or beliefs or ethics or abilities and their capabilities as complex causal entities. And when they are dead, they no longer exercise those abilities. And it's a very common description to suggest, therefore, the soul has left the body and the like. But it's a classic, what's been known historically as a metaphysical concept, like that of God itself as an omniscient, omnipotent entity that can intervene in human affairs, that is incapable of detection, again, by any methods available to science. So those of us who adhere to what is known as the ethics of belief, to wit, that you're never anywhere entitled to hold a belief for which you do not possess sufficient evidence, though obviously you can offer opinions and speculate and conjecture. And I do my best in that area to identify positions of mind for which I do not possess sufficient evidence as speculations, conjectures, or guesses. But a whole lot of what you are describing there is simply something that I would not be in a position to accept based upon my absence of evidence sufficient to sustain belief therein. But that's not to gainsay your entitlement to believe what you are disposed to believe. And of course, you do with a great deal of enthusiasm. So that's just for the record. It's like with Paul doesn't want to distinguish between Jews and Zionists and the like, but the fact is that there are quite a few varieties here of degrees of belief in Jewish superiority, and I'm not convinced that ordinary Jews adhere to that. There are those who follow the Old Testament, those who follow the rabbinical tradition, and they appear to be very, very different indeed. So in my opinion, these distinctions are important to draw. Yeah, Paul, I mean, I know he's going to protest and he thinks it's simplification and it's not doing justice. I know all that, Paul, but the fact is, in my opinion, again, this is a philosophical point, you have to draw distinctions when there are relevant differences, and I believe there are quite a few here, even though I understand your global position. You make it unequivocally clear, and I give you lots of opportunities to assert it. So take another whack at it.
Oh, I don't, you know, how many whacks do I need? Listen, you're the professor of logic and critical thinking, right? So fill a room with people, okay? fill a room with people and tell me, just by looking at them, which ones are the Democrats and which ones are the Republicans? Which ones are the conservatives and which one are the liberals? Which ones are the Christians? Now fill a room with Jews and tell me which ones are the Torah Jews and the Talmudic Jews and the Jews that believe in Zionism. We can't get inside their heads and figure out what their belief is. This is a biological issue. It's a racial issue. It's that simple. So this is why people cross the street when they see a group of black youths coming down the other side. You know, it's simple stuff. There's no need to over-intellectualize it. Everybody understands the philosophical point of view, but we live in a world that necessitates practicality at this point because we're being destroyed by faggotry, okay, by liberals, by effing pussies that are afraid to be racist. And I got to tell you, there's no non-racist way out of this. All right, good. I'm back. I'm getting on my horse here, my rant on Jim Fetzer's show. If we're going to win and there's nothing else to think of besides winning, why would there be anything else other than that? Okay, if we're not going to talk about and think about winning, then just stop crying. Stay home and eat a pizza, you know, and just go along with MSNBC. But if we're going to think about prevailing over this menace that confronts us, then we better get racial and we better get real and we better get real racial in a hurry. Otherwise, we're finished. It's not a debate, okay? This is not Robert's Rules of Order, okay? This is why they expelled the Jews from countries over the centuries, time and time and time again. They didn't expel the Talmudic Jews or the Torah Jews, or they didn't expel the Zionist Jews. They expelled the Jews.
Okay, by the way, Mitchell, would you like to add some thoughts here about Brian and Paul's contributions?
Oh, Mitchell. My. Yeah. I'd like to say we have two more callers waiting, too. Johnny C.S.
Okay.
And 586.
All right.
I'll mute.
God bless you, Paul. That's all I have to say. God bless you, brother.
All right. Bring in the additional callers. Go ahead.
Johnny, you're next.
Hello. Yes. You know, good to have you back and good to hear your voice, and I'm glad you survived it, and I hope you continue to survive. I think you're all making excellent points, and there's no doubt we don't have crystal clear evidence of any of this. You know, we can speculate a lot, and we do. There is a lot of overwhelming evidence that points, you know, to a lot of these things, like, yeah, Jews are running the world, but who's running them? I'll tell you who is. Satan. And you want to talk about winning? The battle's already won. God has already won, and we all know this, and we know the end result. And as far as Hitler goes, we may not know everything about that, too, but I do know this. He ordered his general to build this building, and they held seances in it, worshiping Satan. So I ain't playing devil's advocate with any of these people. And what it comes down to is the right and wrong, good versus evil, God and Satan. I mean, they're hiding everything, and they're tricking people into doing all these sadistic things because it gives Satan all his power. You know, like the sex and the fornication, and Satan's creating the LGBT community in his image because he also is trans. I think people need to start looking into some of these things, and this is what it boils down to. You know, like I said, it's God and Satan and the fight for our souls and the very soul of this country, because you can be patriotic all you want. You know, you could have a military background, you could be a pastor, you could be this and that and whatnot, but this country was the first nation in the world that chose to worship God, and nobody can change that. And that's why it made it so blessed. It wasn't armies or soldiers. It was trying to get out of that hellhole called England. And if we realize the District of Columbia is the source of all the problems, we have the permission to kick them out. They're not Washington, D.C. You know, they built our White House, used to be in Pennsylvania, but now it rests on land that don't belong to the United States. I mean, the jig is up. These people need to take a hike. And if we stop them and kick them out, we don't have to pay back all those hundreds of trillions. I mean, this is a simple, clear-cut, dry case of let's exercise our liberty, which is what's legal and lawful to do. And we clearly have the documents that say we can kick these people out if we feel it's necessary. And they even gave us weapons to do it with. I mean, I don't see a problem other than having the patience to wait for these people to make the biggest mistake they ever made, and then that's when we act. And they just about are there. Anyways, I love all your guys' comments, all of them, even the ones that I don't agree with, because we need to look at every single angle. I try and pretend I'm sitting in a diamond that has a million facets, and each facet is the way they want to kill us. And that's just how I approach everything. But, man, I love your show, and I love everybody on your show and everything you guys talk about. You guys are good guys. I can't deny it. And I thank you for everything you guys are doing. You guys have a wonderful day.
I'm very glad to have you here. And, of course, you know, I believe the search for truth requires exploring a diverse points of view, even ones you might find personally disagreeable or unpleasant. So I'm very glad to have the mix of viewpoints that we find presented here. Mitchell, who is yet our fourth caller?
I believe it's 816 is on, or 856, okay. Excuse me. 586. I'll get it straight, Jim. Hold on.
Okay, 586. Join the conversation. Give us a first name, please.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
My name is Paul. I'm calling from Detroit, or close to Detroit anyway.
Okay.
And talk more about the big lies. I don't believe we went to the moon. I'm a Sandy Hook denier, a Holocaust denier, 9/11 truther. And on your caller Paul's advice, I read Akio Nakatani's book Death Object about nuclear weapons. I'm still a little on the fence on that one. Miles Mathis' piece on it was pretty good, but the part I had a hard time getting around there was if nuclear weapons are a big lie, then that means that the elite of all the countries in the world are kind of on board with this lie, or most of them are, because they've probably done the research and run the computer simulations and realized that explosive nuclear fission is impossible. But that's true probably with the moon landings, too. I mean, the Soviets and the Chinese probably know at this point that we never went to the moon, but they're keeping quiet on it. So they're kind of colluding against the masses in that respect. And I guess why I called is if Paul's still on the line, I'd like some reference material to look at or to read concerning the flat Earth. That's one I have a hard time wrapping my head around. But I'm open to it at this point.
Paul, you're telling me, and Paul from California can confirm, the argument against nukes is a theoretical one? Is that it's not supposed to be possible for fission or fusion bombs to be? Is that the idea? I mean, you know.
That was the clincher in the book. Jim, He didn't provide the math. I don't think I would have understood the mathematics if he had provided.
Yeah. Paul, go ahead, Paul. Paul from California. Go ahead.
All right. So, Jim, I just urge you, I don't know how many times I have to say it. You have probably, spent zero time looking at Akio Nakatani's work. I sent you the link to the PDF at least two different occasions. I have it in my sent folder, as well as references. So, also, there's a website called Big Lies and also Nuke Lies. It's big -lies or nukelies.org. Wealth of material there. So
give
the
us,
argument is twofold.
So yeah, go ahead. That's what I want. Argument, go ahead, go.
Twofold. First, it's based on the physics, right? The physics and the math, and second, on the fraud that's been revealed. So in other words, why would there be evidence of fraud if there wasn't fraud, right? Just like the moon landing hoax, just like everything you've looked into, Jim, you found evidence of fraud. So my base position now is essentially if you find evidence of fraud, then the logical inference is what? That there's fraud. So why would there need to be fraud if it was 100% authentic? So again, this is all covered in his book. It's excellent. Just spend 45 minutes, Jim. Just break it up. Just do two 20 or 25 minute sessions. Jump it around if you want. It's not a long read, but it's not a short read. It requires a little attention and time. But I think you'll get the gist of it when you find out. And again, I can also go by my conversations with a friend of mine, friend of the show who called before, Gary in Arkansas, he's got a master's degree in physics. And both he and his professor is now deceased, unfortunately, but they kept in communication for quite a long time. Both of them believed the same thing, based upon what they had learned long after their formal education was over. They also believed that in many cases they were lied to academically. So this should not be a shock. If they lie to us by the media in the press, why would they not lie to us academically? And I believe that they have. The other thing that he mentioned, what was it that you mentioned again, Paul, besides the nuclear weapons? Something else?
I would like to comment.
The flat Earth.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I still believe the Earth is round, but I'm right. Open so, to so changing my mind on that one.
Right. So this is a journey that one must undertake, and it's not just purely informational, although it does. It is based upon observation and logic at the end of the day, but it is really, it's a combination of intellect and emotion, because this is a belief we've all grown up with since birth, right? I mean, there was a globe in my home. My parents bought a globe. You know, my parents brought encyclopedias. You know, they did all the things that they wanted to provide their kids with the best. And, you know, there was globes in the classroom, and we never questioned it. But when you read the works of very intelligent people and you watch the videos that in many cases are produced by some very, very intelligent people, not only are the arguments more than compelling, but they become overwhelming. And it took me a couple of years, I'd say a good 18 months plus, for me to finally wrap my mind around it. But then I realized that it was really quite simple, that everywhere I've been, and I've been to heights, I've climbed Mount Whitney twice, which is the highest peak in continental North America. Okay, the highest peak in North America is Mount Denali, formerly Mount McKinley. But you don't even need to be that high. But believe me, you can see for hundreds of miles, because you can see other landmarks when you're up there at 14,000, 15,000 feet. These other landmarks, in many cases, are hundreds of miles away and should be hidden by curvature, but they are not, because the horizon line is flat. Everywhere you look in person, okay, go up to any height you want, the horizon line is flat. Forget about topography. Topography sits upon the plane. As you know, planet means small plane. So when you find that the horizon line is flat everywhere you look for the greatest of distances, that is an actual impossibility if curvature existed, because the Earth would be curving away from you in every direction. So you would not have, you could not have a flat horizon line, yet this is what you see over and over again. If you want a good book on the flat Earth, Ed Henry, a frequent guest of Jim's, wrote a book. It's nearly 1,000 pages. I actually forget the title now, but if you just go to his website, greatmountainpublishing.org, I believe, you can find links to his book and some of his articles. And I'll leave it at this. What I used to tell people about Henry Ford's book, I now say the same thing about Ed Henry's book or any other book of length. Henry Ford's book on the International Jew was 900-something pages. And I used to tell people, do you think there's anything in it? And I say the same thing about Ed Henry's book, which is 1,000 pages on the flat Earth. Do you think there's anything in it? Do you think there's anything to it? Well, like I said, it's a journey that most initially will reject, and they won't put enough time into it. But when you do, you can't help but walk away with, you know, the conclusion that we've been lied to for a very long time. And for what reason, I don't know.
I know, if I may comment.
Go ahead.
Well, just briefly, excellent points, and you guys are spot on. The lie about the spinning ball, I call it globe-tard mentality. And the lie is to keep everybody from God. Because if you knew that God existed, you know that he created it. And the Bible clearly says many things to how he did it. And if you believe in the Big Bang Theory, which is, you know, not godly, then you have that explosion where it creates your sun and the solar system and endless galaxies and all that nonsense. But if you read the Bible, he clearly says in the midst of the waters, he separated the waters and create a firmament to separate the waters from above, from below. And he put the Earth in there. And then 4 days later, he put the sun, moon, and stars in there. So they didn't exist. You know, you either believe Big Bang, or you believe it's like God. And I know it's a tough one for a lot of people. Trust me, I know it is. But one more important thing that I wanted to say, because it's truly important, I have a FEMA manual that I got acquired 25 years ago in case of an emergency in the United States. And it, on the cover, it shows a circle, four pie shapes. And one pie shape has syringes and vaccines and doctor logos and a nurse wearing a mask. Another logo shows immigrants running across the border. Another pie shape shows, you know, hurricanes and tornadoes. And then the fourth one is a nuke. And so it seems to me we've had all three pie shapes except for one. And then, you know, it's hard telling with these people, but they're diabolical. But the flat earth thing, it's all nonsense. They went from NASA to Nazi in the same year that Nazis disappeared. They come up with NASA, which is really close to Nazi. And then you have the leader of a head guy of the Nazi guy, you know, running it. And then the guy that studied under Joseph Mengele, because I have the books at home, I can show you. He went to Texas to do a vaccine program, and then we have what we have.
Would you describe your conception of flat Earth as a disc in space? I mean, what are the dimensions of your flat Earth, and what's on the what's on the other side of the flat Earth? I mean, obviously a flat object.
It's obvious water is above us, because he said in the midst of the waters. So we're in the midst of the waters. So above the firmament is obviously water, because that's what God says. I believe God's word. I don't believe in man's and masses and all that nonsense, you know. It says in the midst of the waters. Yeah. You know, and just real briefly, you know, like I said.
Okay. So let's interject.
We are here in a dome. There's no leaving. As far as dimensions goes, there are no dimensions, but you can find clearly, you know, picture diagrams that go back hundreds of years that show, you know, the flat plane with the dome.
Okay, please. Just allow me a quick interjection, please. Okay. This is the.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their...